Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved, but we are here to help you equip teenagers through the power of connection. I'm Carly Duke, and with me, as always, is Chris Roby.
Hello.
We are in our fourth and final week of TL Selects, where we are picking old episodes that Teen Life did a long, long time ago, and we are bringing them back to our feed because these are interviews, man, all three of our experts are incredible interviews, and especially this one is one, a topic that me and Chris have been wanting to cover, but I don't think we were the right voice to cover it.
Right, and this is our friend Robert Purvey, who is a student pastor, a community advocate volunteer, does so much work in his community, and speaks a lot around the topics of race and building bridges. Mm-hmm. And we've had Robert on the podcast here, obviously, with this interview, and also spoke recently at Teen Life Summit, which was a continuing education event that we did back earlier this year, and just made such a huge impact with his words and his insight. This interview, like I said, was, or like Carly said, was 5 years ago.
A lot was different 5 years ago.
Yeah, a lot was different. This conversation around race was pre-2020, pre-George Floyd, pre-all the turmoil that we faced over the last 18 months. And so it's a really interesting insight to hear how much of this was already being talked about before this really got pushed to the national conversation. So that's why we feel like it's important for us to be revisiting these conversations with guys like Robert.
As you go into this interview, we hope that you'll keep an open mind. We hope that you will hear his heart, because he really is here to help teenagers, and also here to help us. I learned so much from sitting down with Robert, and now there are so many resources out there. I'll link some different other podcast series that you might be interested around this topic, and some books that Robert has suggested to us in the past. But we hope that you enjoy this interview with Robert Purvey.
So guys, welcome to the podcast. We're sitting in Robert Purvey's office at Antioch Fellowship Church. Beautiful church. And
yeah, it is so pretty.
Is this considered South Dallas?
Southwest Dallas.
Okay. All right. Yeah. As I was driving here, I've been out this part of town, but just don't know where, what we call everything.
Yeah, it's Southwest Dallas. We're right on the cusp of the suburbs of Cedar Hill, DeSoto, Duncanville, like right there on the edge of all three of them.
Gotcha. So, okay. All right. Yeah. All right. So we are here today to talk with Robert about racism, culture, and we were connected with Robert through a retreat that he spoke at where Carly was back in September. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Earlier this fall.
Uh-huh. And so she was really impressed with Robert, and we got in touch with him, and he was happy to talk. And so thanks for being with us, man.
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. So just to get started, tell us a little bit about your experience with racism, how it's affected your worldview. Why would we even be talking to you about this right now, so to speak?
I guess for me, I've had maybe one personal racist experience where I was affected directly. Most of my experiences have been just due to my surroundings. People that I know and love have been involved in it. But for me personally, it's just been one incident when I was in high school, and I was pulled over by a cop. And just some things that he said. My mom had a 500 series BMW. I loved it. I probably went too fast in it several times. got pulled over, and the police officer basically said that you shouldn't have this type of car. And I said, sir, why not? He said, because you're black. This is not your neighborhood. Did you steal it? We're going to run the plates and see if you stole the car. And like pretty much flat out told me that, you know, like pretty much like this was like in 2001. So that was my first interaction just directly with racism. A lot of it has just been kind of indirect. So I don't know if you've heard about it, but like I've been in the store where I've gone in with some friends who were different color than me, or gone into a store where some people think that people of color shouldn't shop at. What I mean by that is like stores that have expensive things and nice things, and you walk in and you're asked questions almost like, you do know we only take credit, or, you know, you do know that this is this amount or that amount. Mm-hmm. Those type of questions kind of like, you know, do you really have this, that type thing. So, it's one of those things. I'll talk about it, but for me, I think it's something that we need to just discuss amongst each other, adults with teens that we work with, teens that we know, just to get the elephant out the room. Uh-huh. Like, it exists. Yes, it does. We all come from different backgrounds. We're all raised differently. Uh-huh. And I'm sure you've heard your parents, grandparents, cousins, uncles, somebody say something about other people that wasn't right. But that shouldn't form how we treat people. Uh-huh. We'll always have preconceived ideas and notions about people, but that's not how we treat people. I think, yes, some jokes can go too far. Some people can say things, but when it comes to how people are treated and how you perceive people, that's something that's taught. Mm-hmm. Something that's taught. So I think that we need to break down a lot of bad teaching that's going on to mm-hmm. our teens. And so when I talk about racism, I talk about from the standpoint of this is what it is, and this is how we can change it. Because a lot of people... I mean, I don't mean any disrespect. A lot of people are just ignorant. They mm-hmm. They just don't know.
So we're doing the podcast.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. They just don't know that, hey, this could be racist. And one thing, I don't want people to think, okay, now just go out here and find some black person to be nice to. Mm-hmm. No, like just if you can posture your heart to just treat people right because they're people, mm-hmm. we can X out a lot of this stuff that we're dealing with.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And going kind of to that discussion of not being ignorant and having this yeah. discussion in a positive way. When we're talking about racism and culture, can you talk a little bit about terms? Mm-hmm. For instance, talking about people of color, what terms should we be using that aren't going to be offensive or ignorant or cause problems?
I'll tell you one thing that gets me. I love just people, just be yourself. I've been in environments where people think because I'm black, they're like, what's up, bro? How you doing? Like, don't switch it up. Like, do not switch it up. Like, you look crazy. Like don't just be you. Just uh-huh. be who you are. But of course, we all know the N-word shouldn't be used by anybody.
Right.
But I've heard, you know, I mean, it's terms. And this is just not with just black people. You know, I've heard teens, you know, wetback, you know, mm-hmm. coon, you know, even redneck, white trash, any type of names just goes against anybody. Because at the end of the day, what I don't want people to feel like, it's not just white people understanding what's racist to black people. It's black people understanding that, hey, it's some things we shouldn't say about white people too. Mm. It's just, you know, racism is when one group of people feels superior to another because of how they look, what they have, whatever. And that's what we deal with our society. But at the same instance, I know a lot of black people that don't like white people. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make it right. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So I think it just needs to be talked about on both ends. Because you're white, you don't have the right to look down on anybody else. And I guess we'll talk about it later. There's something called white privilege. I don't know if you guys like heard it. Mm-hmm. But it's not a horribly bad term, but we'll break down what it is. But when it comes to just how people are treated, it's just like from the love of your heart for people being people, not really worried about color and racism and all that stuff. So, right. Yeah.
So what are you observing culturally right now? Because, I mean, we see what's going on in the news. Obviously, depending where you're coming from, you're going to view it in a certain lens.
Right.
Do you see that trickling into teen culture and how they interact with each other?
A lot of teens are exercising how they feel based off what they see.
Uh-huh.
I think the media does a great job at forming people's opinions, mm-hmm. does a horrible job at putting out what's right and what should be put out there. And so a lot of our teens, they watch TV. They're on social media. So whatever is put out there for them to read or for them to see, it forms their opinion. So if all they're seeing is racial tension, that's what it's going to be in the schools. Mm-hmm. So the conversations you hear when you walk through the hallways of high schools and when teens have conversations with each other, it's basically just repeated from what they hear on TV. It's no facts. It's really not even personal opinions. It's formed opinions based off what they've heard or what they've seen. And so it's very important that we have people and sit down our teens and have conversations about facts, what's really going on. But better yet, this is how you can be a part of the change. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't continue this type of stuff. Like, I'm tired of it. Mm-hmm. like there is no reason why 2016 should be looking just like or worse than 1965. Mm. Like, we should be way beyond where we were. Right. And it seems like we continue going backwards because when things happen, we always isolate things into color. I can't, like, if a white police officer kills a black male, automatically people assume racism. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been several instances where the officer was wrong, but in the general sense, we should not just yell out racism whenever something happens between a black and a white person or a black and brown person. Like, you have to know what's going on. But we're in a culture where media just runs with a story and they paint a picture and our teens are now running with it. So there should be no reason. This generation, you guys already know this, that this generation just has an issue with authority anyway. This generation is not scared of anything.
Right.
Like they just buck authority. And so when it comes to that, we're not teaching how to obey or respect authority. So when culture is saying that police officers are wrong or this is wrong, we have teens out here that are going against the officers just because they're white or just because they're in a place of authority. And if the officer is black, they're supposed to treat me a certain way. If the officer is white, they're going to treat me a certain way. So we're just painting this picture that's completely wrong. We got to teach our teens to love people, period. And really not worry about color. How we do that, it's a long conversation. It's a long process, but we have to start it.
So as you talk to African-American students mm-hmm. about police brutality or white privilege, is that a hard conversation to have?
To answer your question, no, it's not. It's not a hard conversation to have. The reason why it's not hard is because I try to teach teens from the angle of, one, respecting authority.
Uh-huh.
Like, respecting authority, period. Mm-hmm. If that police officer has anything against you, let him have it against you, but don't give him a reason to take the issue to another level. Mm-hmm. But then teens will come back, well, there's situations where somebody wasn't doing anything and the police just shot him or whatever like that. You cannot be accountable for how somebody treats you. It'll be accountable for how you treat them.
Right.
So it's not giving the other person the pass. It's just making you accountable for yourself. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of teens want to push it. The reason why I can be angry, the reason why I can be mad, the reason why I can be upset, I can rebel, I can go against and buck authority because they're not treating me right.
Mm-hmm.
And when the reality is, there are plenty more white officers that are doing right than the one that are done wrong. But in these few isolated incidents, it's crazy how over the last 5 or 6 years, maybe 8 national incidents have really just turned us against each other. But so I guarantee you, if you had at least 8 national incidents where we were coming together and doing stuff together that had the same type of publicity as the negative incidents, we would be better together.
Absolutely.
So it's what's put out. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy how this stuff is trickling into our schools, into our churches, because it's forming the opinions of people who lead our teens. Mm-hmm. So we got to be very careful. Our youth pastors, our teachers, our principals, our counselors had to be very careful in how they voice their opinions about what happens in culture, because you shape and mold the minds of the teens that you pour into every day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point. And kind of, you're starting to talk about this, but what are some of the major things that we can use to combat racism, especially with our teenagers?
Conversation, healthy conversation, in the sense of, let me understand you. Like one of the best things for me, when I first went into college, I went to Southwestern Assemblies of God University in Waxahachie, Texas, a little small suburban town right outside of Dallas here. And I was born and raised in South Houston, in a predominantly African-American environment, a deep, rich African-American environment. And I moved from there to a predominantly Caucasian environment. And so when I got to college, I was very militant, had the mindset that you see a lot of teens have today, that white people against black people, and I got something to prove. And I was real weird and stupid freshman year. I was, man. So I finally came into a real relationship with Jesus Christ and understood how he loves all, he died for all. He loves all. And that really changed my worldview on just, there's no way that I can say I love God, preach the word of God, and not love people. Mm-hmm. And so there had to be a conversation had with people on my college campus. I began to understand people, where they come from, how they were raised, and really love their culture, love things about them. And what you'll find out is people come from different backgrounds. Mom and dad, sisters and brothers, different cultures, environments, different foods they like, different things, places they like to go. Just learning stuff about people. And the more I build a relationship with you, then we can have that hard conversation. Because if I build a relationship with you and we have that hard conversation, you know my heart. You know where it's coming from. So I can then ask you, hey, was your grandfather a racist? Or what did your grandfather say about black people? You can ask me, hey, how did your grandparents feel about white people? You can have that conversation when you have a relationship. Mm-hmm. Conversations about tough topics that aren't rooted in relationship always become arguments. Mm-hmm. Always. It's like tough topics that aren't rooted in relationship always become arguments because the people that are talking don't care about each other. So we have to start by just building relationships between our students of all colors. Just building authentic, putting things in place for them to organically like come together and do things together. Let's stop isolating so much. So when it comes to churches, let's do more multi-ethnic activities together, more events. Let's go to camp together. Let's have worship together. Let's go out for coffee together. Let's just intentionally hang out together and enjoy each other. Not just once a year, not just once a quarter, but have some things on a consistent basis where these teens are being a part of each other's life. Mm-hmm. In schools, we have to have events where we're intentional about making sure kids come together, especially if you're in a school where it's a multi-ethnic school. Like a lot of schools just don't have the capability of doing it because a lot of schools you go to are either predominantly something or something else. But even then, the teachers and principal, it should be a must, a very imperative thing that they bridge that gap and do things where kids have to do engage in multi-ethnic activities and multi-ethnic things. I think it's just amazing. One of the things I always laugh about when I go to football games, in the second half of the football games, the cheerleaders take each other to each side. And they do a cheer together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, it may sound corny, but it just really pricks my heart. I think that's how we ought to be. Like, no matter what side we're on, no matter who we're cheering for, that'll be some point in time where we bring and bridge people together and say, hey, look, we can do this together. We can cheer together. We can chant together. And everybody claps. Mm-hmm. And you look at those cheerleaders, different uniforms, different shades, but they've all done something together. They introduce each other by name and everybody's happy. If we can have that same mentality in life, like if I can come to your school, come to your neighborhood, come to your church, and we do something together because we're on the same, we do the same thing. All of them are cheerleaders. They cheerlead for different squads, mm-hmm. different colors, but they do the same thing.
Right.
So if I'm Church of God, if I'm Church of God in Christ, if I'm Baptist, if I'm Lutheran, if I'm Methodist, if I'm public school, private school, charter school, like if I'm a school, we're all being educated. From a church, we're all trying to do ministry. We can come together and just show the world, hey, look, we all kind of do things a little differently, but we serve one God. We have one purpose. Look at us doing this together.
You'd mentioned earlier about white privilege.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, especially as a...
So I think what a lot of people don't realize is that here in America, if you're white, when you say white privilege, like there are certain things you don't have to worry about. A white parent doesn't have to have the conversation with their teen about, I'll make sure you get home safe. Well, if the police stop you, make sure you put your hands on the wheel or be fear because you might be fearful of your life. Mm-hmm. It's a different conversation. The white family conversation is be respectful to law enforcement because that's what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. The black conversation is be respectful to law enforcement because you don't want to get killed. Mm-hmm. You see, it's a different conversation. White privilege in America, if you're white, there are just certain things you can have without worrying about being oppressed in any way. Mm-hmm. And really, to generalize it, that's pretty much what it is. Mm-hmm. That you can move forward in life, have a life the American way, if you will, without worrying about systematic oppression, without worrying about injustice on a major part. Mm-hmm. There's just a different level of conversation that has to be had in the white home than the black home. And it's just one of those things to where I think if it was acknowledged that, hey, we understand there is a such thing as white privilege, but we're not using it to oppress anybody. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, because y'all, we're talking about hundreds of years. Slavery in America lasted for over 400 years. After slavery was abolished, it was almost 100 years after that the Civil Rights Act was passed.
Right.
So you have almost 500 years of oppression. Slavery in America, or slavery, black slavery, is actually older than the established America that we know. Right. So we're going to have at least 400 years of peace and understanding to even begin to have a new world where we would like. Mm-hmm. So how do we make it better? We acknowledge that, okay, this is in our DNA. as Americans, this is who we are because this is how our country was founded. Slavery was a part of our country's foundation. It was who we are. Oppression was systematically in place. Like, black people couldn't vote. The Jim Crow laws were in place. There were laws that said, hey, you know, if there are more than two or three black people standing in the crowd, it was against the law. That black people couldn't do that. There was stuff going on. It was systematically in place to where black people stayed on one part of the town and the other. And we're old enough to remember or see things like whites only, blacks only. That I remember hearing stories. My dad, if he wanted to get something to eat, they had to go around to the back kitchen to get a burger. They couldn't go in the establishment. They had to get their food through the back door of the kitchen because they were black. And so that's stuff that's a part of our culture. We've seen movies like Selma, and we've seen movies like 12 Years a Slave that kind of like depict what happened in those times. But we can't deny it. That's what happened in our country. Mm-hmm. So once the conversation is, okay, that's what happened. That's how we got to where we are, because that horrible stuff happened. What is the narrative we're going to write for the next 400 years?
Right.
What are we going to do about that? Are we going to keep that going? Not. And a lot of black people get mad when I say this, and I have to really let them know I'm not coming from a place of just trying to neglect it. I'm not saying forget about slavery. I'm not saying that. Forget about who we are. But stop using it as a crutch for us to not like other people, not love other people, or not even move forward. Mm-hmm. Like, it happened. Yes, it did. And it shaped a lot of mindsets today. But we can't take that with us into the future. Mm-hmm. We have to learn from that stuff. And I have to be able to love you past that. At the end of the day, that wasn't you. You know, like, the white people I know now didn't enslave black people.
Right.
And so I can't hold that against you. But what we can do is talk about how we were taught, our mindsets, and what did our parents teach us that maybe was wrong. Mm-hmm. I love my mom and dad. But what was some stuff they taught us about white people, or what was some stuff they taught us about people in general that wasn't really right?
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And I think that conversation has to be had with everybody.
So with the white privilege conversation, you know, when I see it brought up, especially like online, a lot of the white people I know get really defensive.
Yeah.
Just about the term.
Right.
How do we get past that? Because I agree with you. Like, this is an incredibly important conversation for white people to have. Because I'll admit the first time that I heard it was a little bit like, what?
Right,
you know,
right.
because you associate with white supremacy,
right?
Which is just a whole other road there. How do you have that conversation, or at least break down those barriers where those conversations can be had with white people?
Anybody becomes defensive about anything that puts them in a negative light,
right?
So no matter what it is, I think that conversation just has to be had that. When you say white privilege, you're not saying white people are bad. You're just saying the way our system is set up, it allows white people to be privileged in this system because it wasn't made for the society that we're trying to fix now. The America that we know was not founded when they said all men or all of us are created equal. People of color weren't a part of that. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? We weren't a part of that statement. And so from that statement alone, that kind of like what white privilege is. And like, this country was made for us. I mean, not for y'all. So, but then the people, voices begin to rise. People begin to talk, say, hey, we don't want to be treated this way. If we're here and we're Americans by law, legally, this is stuff we ought to have. So that those conversations begin to happen. So when you have a conversation with a white person or anybody and you say white privilege, it's a conversation. I'm not saying this to demean you or to be wrong. Just look at the history of how our country was founded. Mm. Look at how we got to this point. Mm. And then you'll be able to understand what is meant by white privilege, but it's not meant to make you feel sorry or even make you do anything for me. It's just to recognize, I think a lot of people don't want to recognize a lot of the blood that was shed at the hands of hate. Mm-hmm. That in our country, like, it just runs deep. And I think when you have that conversation, it puts people on edge. For white people, it puts them on edge. For black people, it puts them on edge because both parties were treated differently or see things differently. Right. Yeah, that's probably why it would happen that way. Mm-hmm.
Kind of taking this conversation to schools, what can schools be doing better to foster these relationships? I know around us, there's been some stuff in the news of coaches or teachers saying things and people get up in arms. And what can schools be doing and those helpers that are in schools do?
Teachers have to be very mindful that you can't allow your personal opinion to become your student's opinion. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is, as a teacher, you have to be grown. You have to be very grown and very adult. And there are some conversations that can only be had between you and another adult for you to get some clear understanding. I think what happens in a lot of schools is a lot of teachers really don't understand some things. And in teaching, they're not teaching the subject. They're teaching the opinion. And it's their opinion. So when you have this conversation, it needs to be had in a mature adult way first before you have it with teens.
Right.
So that conversation is helpful and healthy and not opinionated. Because then what happens is you have a school divided. You have teachers and students that feel a certain way, the teachers that feel another way, and then you have a school clashing together. And then you have white teachers against black teachers, or people who have one opinion and people who have another against each other. It has to be a healthy conversation had between administrators and teachers first. This is how we're going to combat this issue. This is how the conversation should be had. There should be something done behind closed doors to teachers that say, hey, when we go out here, we're presenting a united front for the health of our school and our students. Even if it's not how you personally feel, handle that away from the students. Mm-hmm. But in front of the students, what message do we want to send our students? Is it a healthy message? Is it a message that unifies everybody? If the answer for that is yes, okay, well, this is how we have that conversation. And everybody has to be on the same page. What happens in our schools is that conversation is not being had. It's being left up to teachers and administrators to voice their opinions to students, and it comes out all wrong. Mm-hmm. And then so you either validate what a student is feeling, or you give them ideas, and then you just have clash. Mm-hmm. Especially a lot of our multi-ethnic schools. You really don't see it a lot in schools who are predominantly white, schools that are predominantly black, or even schools that are predominantly brown. Most of the time speak the same language. So it takes some mature people to change that tone. But when you get in multi-ethnic schools, it gets real choppy in those waters because you have so many different opinions and somebody has to step up and say, hey, this is how we approach it.
Right, right. So as we kind of wrap this up, what are some small ways that white and black communities can come together?
The things that we do separately or things that we do individually have to become things we do collectively. So we go to church with our people. We serve communities with our people. We go grocery shopping with our people. So it has to be to where we're very intentional by doing these things together. And so if I was to encourage anybody in any role, a youth pastor, a teacher, a community leader, how do you bridge that gap? You be very intentional about what you do together. Mm-hmm. Be very intentional about putting different people that look differently in front of people, and where it's not scary, it's not spooky. It's just people are being people. Mm-hmm. One of the best things that ever happened, man, I did the camp for the Hills Church a couple of months back. Mm-hmm. And I think I made the statement there, but I've been in environments where I've been tolerated, but I've also been in environments where I've been accepted. And being in that environment, I think there are maybe three or four people of color that I saw there, mm-hmm. but color was never an issue. Mm-hmm. The love there, the authenticity there, the genuineness there, if our world could have felt that, mm-hmm. in that moment, mm-hmm. we could be a lot better. Yeah. That's the first time I've ever been in a room of people that didn't look like me on different occasions. I think I spoke three times, but there was never any tension. There was this level of, we want Jesus, we want to grow, we want to know together. And it was just a beautiful feeling. And if our world can feel that, if our schools can feel that, like, hey, let's come in the room and let's just love each other for who we are. We'll get past all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. If I could just love you, if I love you, there's things about you I may not like, but it doesn't stop me from loving you. Mm-hmm. But if I hate you, I will never get to the point of liking you. Mm-hmm. Like is the prerequisite to love. Mm-hmm. I cannot love you unless I like you first. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I can't like you if I hate you. So I have to let the Lord change my heart, so I can at least get to the point of liking you and accepting you, then relationship can grow and build to the point of love. And then we can move further with that, because that's what's going to help us, man. Mm-hmm. Just true, genuine love and acceptance for people, just where they are, for who they are, is the beginning, is the start. Let's stop being on our own islands. Stop trying to defend our points on why we're right, why we're wrong. Let's forget about that, and let's just begin to love each other. Spare me from the person that says they love Jesus, they want to help, they want to see our world get better, but they can't stand people. Mm-hmm. Nah, that doesn't work right. at all.
All right. Well, kind of to wrap up, we have two questions that we want to ask you. And the first one is, what is one thing you'd like a teenager or a student to hear from what we talked about today about racism and about this conversation?
Don't allow culture to shape your worldview. I guess if I could say it in a way, don't allow external circumstances, situations to change your internal conviction. I mean, don't let things that happen externally in culture change what you feel about Christ on the inside and the love you have in your heart. Let that drive you. Don't worry. People, culture will be culture. People will be people. But don't let that change how you love them. Hmm. It might be one of the hardest things you ever will have to do in life. But don't let the situations and circumstances of people change how you love people. Love unconditionally. Love with reckless abandon. And I promise you, stuff will change.
So what would you say to a helper, someone in a helping role for a teenager, about this topic of racism and culture? One thing take away today.
Flush your heart out first. Any preconceived notions, any hatred, any things you've learned, flush that out first. Mm-hmm. And then refill it with the love of Christ, with the word of God, and a passion for people. Then go. Mm-hmm. Do not go until you've completely flushed out everything that can hinder you from being positive to everybody. Mm-hmm. And once you've done that, really and authentically do that. Ask the Lord to really flush out your heart mm-hmm. and refill you with his love. Then go. Mm-hmm. Don't try to go on your own with everything you've known before.
Yeah. So I love these kind of conversations where as we're talking, I'm thinking of like 10 other podcast ideas I'd love to talk to you about. But this is awesome, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys so much for having me. Any conversation, any topic, anything I can do to help people, just that light to come on. I'm down.
This is great. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Robert.
All right, that's a wrap on this one. Thank you so much for listening. A special thanks to Carly Duke and to Kelly Fan for producing this podcast. Also to Luke Cabrera for our awesome podcast music. If you want to know more about Luke and his music, check out his contact info in the description. Well, this podcast is for the helpers, and we really hope you feel helped. If there's something we haven't talked about or a topic that you're really interested in, email us at podcast@teenlife.ngo, and we will do our best to get to that topic. We will see you next week.